Hello, friends, and welcome once more to a very happy Monday on this Kings of Anglia Ipswich Town podcast. It's happy because spring appears to be springing outside the window here at Heath Towers. It's happy, of course, because the Tractor Girls put on a show at Portman Road at the weekend. It's happy because we've got loads more money. Make it rain in Ipswich Town. It's also happy because we've got all four Kings here today to talk excitedly about all those things I've just mentioned and much more. I'm Mark Heath, I'm your host, and I'm going to start with the boy who is just pointing to all of his fellow Kings. He's got a lovely little, what is that behind you on the wall there, Rossi? Is it something, what is it? Is it a painting? Is it a blanket? What is it?
I don't, it's got a proper name for it, but I don't know what it's called. It's just...
Yeah. Is it made of cloth?
Yeah, cloth, yeah.
I do look like I'm a hostage.
a cult leader, something like that.
Yeah. Join my cult.
Yeah, I'd be up for that, mate, the cult of Ross. I think it'd probably be quite good fun. I'm tempted now to jump down a very deep hole into what your cult manifesto would be, but I'm going to avoid that because I think that takes quite a long time. Stewie, you had 3 days off this weekend. You were well-deserved, I might say, friend, long weekend. I'm assuming, though, it was spent slavishly working on your book.
There was some of that. The deadline for submitting that is fast approaching. So, bit of work on that, and I did attend the women's game actually as well. Took my daughter, which was a nice experience.
Excellent. We're going to talk about that in due course. And of course, the man that was covering that, along with Rossi and Tom Cann, AJ. How's things? How was your weekend?
Yeah, my weekend was good. I don't know if there are too many like wealthy Americans around Ipswich. If anyone like wants to chip into the £25 parking fine that I got for forgetting to pay for my ticket at the women's game on Saturday, then they are absolutely welcome to.
You just forgot to pay?
Yeah, this happens a lot where I get in, and obviously, so the system that they have in the car park I go to is on your phone. I can be quite good at doing it, but there's the occasional time where I'm it just goes out your head. You get to the car park and you're in match zone. You're in the stadium zone. Everything's around what you're going to go cover, and it just goes out the window. And I've been quite fortunate, hoping that there aren't any like ticket inspectors listening to this pod, with some of the games I've not been caught out, but this one I have been, which was now taught me my lesson to always remember and not be stupid.
So you are officially revealing, AJ, you're a criminal, a fugitive from justice.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah,
you might have to reconsider your position because kind of criminals on this show, friends.
Can you not?
Probably not. No.
Nah.
Should we talk excitedly about the Ipswich Town women and what a day it was on Saturday? We're going to start there, friends, and then we're going to move on to, obviously, investment accounts, as internationals to talk about. There's all sorts to talk about today. But let's start with the women, because that was the big news from the weekend. 5-0. We expected them to beat Chatham Town. We were hoping it wouldn't be a cricket score. 5-0 sits in that quite sweet zone, just following the blokes winning 6-0 the weekend before. 5-0 against Chatham Town. Rossi, I'm going to start with you, because you've covered the ladies' team for a long, long time. That's how you got your in with us, in fact. Many years ago, you came to a young, fresh-faced Rossi, sat in the office and explained to me how he could help us cover the women's game. And then you got involved and now you're with us. So it's been a long time coming for the team. It's also been a long time coming for you. Did you weep tears of joy on Saturday, sitting pitchside at Portman Road?
Obviously, I'm pitchside Portman Road every week, so it's not a new thing for me. But it was what an occasion it was, yeah. You know, Trailblazers, that's what Joe Sheehan's calling them. He actually changed the group chat to Trailblazers, which I like to see. But yeah, when I first covered the team, I think the attendance was like 32, something like that. A man and his dog, you know, a few family and friends. But
Where were they playing then?
No, it's still at Felixstowe.
They've always been at Felixstowe.
Yeah, but obviously Felixstowe's changed because they got like, you know, I think they raised so much money and they got a new clubhouse and everything. But that was before they got the new clubhouse. So I went there when they had like an old shed as their clubhouse and the dressing rooms weren't great. But yeah, to 30 plus people to now over 10,000 people, just what a day. You know, up the players, obviously a day for them to remember in their careers and their lives, or their families were there as well. And yeah, they put on a show. They always play good football, just like Kieran McKenna's men. They played a similar style and they entertained that crowd.
Yeah. Going to come on to some, obviously we've got some clips from Joe Sheehan and Sophie Peskett we're going to play you in a minute, but just coming to you, AJ, covering the game, running the live blog for us, etc. Extraordinary stat which I haven't been able to independently verify, but I don't let the facts get in the way of a good story. The third highest attendance in English football on Saturday was at Portman Road. Top, the dull, pointless England football friendly at Wembley. England football friendly, the three most boring words in sport. Second, Man City, Man United women at the Etihad. Big day, big game. Third, 10,000 plus at Portman Road. Now, I tried to verify this yesterday. I haven't got all the attendance figures, unfortunately, for League Two, but it seems to be fairly widely reported. And if that's true, and indeed I think it is, what a statement and what a display of support for the women's side.
Yeah, I had a little look through League One and League Two, and you could probably say it's helped by some of the teams that might be getting around 20,000 playing away, but it shouldn't at all distract from the number that was there. It was absolutely remarkable. It's a record, obviously, for the women's team and a record for the league, which I think is really, really special, even taking aside the fact it was the third highest of the day, regardless of the league and regardless of the gender. And, obviously so much of that goes towards wanting to support the women's team, but I think the club deserves a lot of credit as well for the way that they built up to this, in terms of the fact that they did everything they possibly could to replicate a men's match day, which I thought was what stood out to me. They put on press conferences, obviously. They did a lot of videos on Town TV that we've seen. They've spoken to us. We've had players and stuff like that on the podcasts. And it then transferred onto the day as well. Fan zone open. Really busy, I thought, especially considering that I was getting in around half an hour after it opened. They had the Manchester Derby on the TV. And I was thinking, this is at this time, it's actually busier than a lot of what I've seen from the men's games in terms of the fan zone. And then from there, everything else as well, the way that they warmed up, it was the same music that the men warm up to. They walked out to Insomnia. They had the coach welcome coming in. It was just making sure that it was near enough to a carbon copy, equal treatment, and it gave it the same kind of feel, even though it was essentially a dead rubber football match, as Joe Sheehan said after the game. The fact that so many people have come for a game that is probably not going to mean a great deal in our season is really special. And hopefully, fingers crossed, shows what they can now go on to do in the coming months going into next season. Because if they can go and have a season maybe a little bit more like they did last year, then hopefully this can continue to grow.
Ross, you put your hand up there.
It hailed at some point during the before the game. So I think that was at one stage. I thought, oh God, people are going to be put off going to the fan zone. That hailed maybe for about 2-5 minutes. And then everyone then, of course, went into the fan zone. But yeah, I was worried at one stage when, please don't be bad weather for this game. But thankfully, the sun did shine. I was thinking, why is it hailing at the start of spring? This is crazy.
Did you see the half-time hail?
That as well.
Were you out for that? That was some sort of biblical stuff like Noah's Ark level. That was unbelievable.
Pretty much
the English weather. Good variance there, Ross. Between 2 and 5 minutes to hail. Excellent detail. I'm going to come to you in a minute, Stewie, because you were a punter on this day, and I want to get your thoughts on it as a punter and also the father of a young lady. But first of all, let's hear from Joe Sheehan on the day as a whole. The Tractor Girls boss. This is quite a long clip, but I reckon it's probably worth listening to entirely.
Joe, can we start with you? That was a pretty amazing day, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I think we spoke in a week about thinking that the occasion was a lot bigger than the result was going to be. We didn't spend too much time thinking about the result. It was more, how could we make an impression on so many people? How could we be trailblazers and influence and inspire? And I think hope, give so many young children hope to fulfil something like Sophie's managed to experience today. To get over 10,000 for a game like this, in respect where we can't win our division, there's not many games to go, and for so many people to come and watch us with that in mind is incredible. And we're very grateful for everyone who's attended, and like I say, for us, we are just hoping that we've been able to light a flame in so many young children that can go home tonight and lay in bed and think about a performance like Sophie's and try and emulate her one day, and aspire to experience something that like we have today.
Yeah, and you really did manage to put on a show as well. That, as you said, would have been an important thing to try and get everyone involved, and it was a really entertaining game throughout.
Yeah, we needed to showcase a reasonably good level to make an impression on so many other factors. I think first half we probably wasn't anywhere near the level that we're capable of, and obviously we can understand that for such a young group, you know, experiencing something like that for the first time can be really difficult to navigate their way through. But yeah, second half, you know, we were desperate to try and play better and give a better account of ourselves, and I think the fourth goal probably epitomises that. I think it's a goal that's more like the level that we're trying to perform at. And I think we can be pleased with how we manage the occasion and the result. But, you know, it's just so early for us still, and we want to be better, so much better than we are. And that's, we work really hard throughout the week to try and keep progressing.
There we go then, Joe Sheehan. He speaks very well, doesn't he? Reminiscent of a certain Kieran McKenna in terms of the way he talks. Sue, then, you were a punter on this day. I'm assuming you had to go in disguise, so no one recognised you. What was it like for you?
Absolutely not. Really enjoyed it. Yeah, it's nice. It's not often I go to football just for enjoyment purposes. So first of all, that was quite nice to kind of rock up a bit later and then to just be able to leave at the full-time whistle and be home in time for tea on a Saturday. That was nice. But, you know, the big thing for me was to be able to take my daughter, who's 7, nearly 8. I didn't know... She hasn't shown a huge amount of interest towards football, but, you know, like a lot of young girls, when the Lionesses were on TV in the major tournament and I had that on at home, she sort of went, oh, girls can play football as well, sort of thing. And you know, I said it in the press conference with Joe and Maria last week, you have to kind of see it to be it. And who knows what kind of flame that's kind of lit in her and thousands of young girls in that stadium. So, yeah, I think it was a tale of two halves for us. We kind of sat in the S block of Cobbold in the first half, which is where the away fans normally are, that sort of area. She didn't really like a lot of the shouting and screaming. That's not for her. Then the heavens opened at half time, as the boys said, and that worked in our favour because they then opened up the top tier and let us go up there. She loved it up there. She's like me. She likes to see the pitch from up high, and the second half performance was better, as Joe said in his clip there. The fourth goal was a peach, driving run down the left, a back heel from Natasha Thomas, a sweeping finish from Lena Gunning Williams, and it's interesting the things that it reminded me of, the things that kind of spark your imagination as a kid. She was, you know, looking up at the, well, first of all, that walk up the steps when we first got there and seeing the pitch. Took a nice, you know, I took a couple of steps back and waited and just took a little video and a picture of that, and seeing the pitch for the first time, just looking up at the scoreboard, colours of people's boots. She was very taken with Lena Gunning Williams' long plaited hair that goes right down to her waist. All little things like that, some of the goal celebrations, stuff like that. So, yeah, I really enjoyed it. It was great.
Outstanding. That is a memory I think everyone can connect to. I think everyone remembers the first time they went to a football game and that, like, going up the steps and then seeing the pitch in front of you. Now, my first game was at the baseball ground, and that pitch was largely sand when I was watching Derby County, first of all. But in my mind, it was the most beautiful luminescent green that I'd ever seen. So I can only imagine what it is like now for kids, because pitches are perfect now, aren't it? I mean, It must be like seeing something from another world. Amazing. Anyway, I enjoyed what you said there about inspiring, Stu. And we've got a clip here from Sophie Peskett, who, by all accounts, had a very good game on just that, on being a role model. So let's hear from her and then talk a bit further about the game itself.
And speaking to fans before the game, a lot of them were talking about you guys being inspirations and this being quite an inspirational day. What's that like for you, knowing that all these young girls in particular came to watch, and many of them their first ever football game live? What's that like for you?
Yeah, I think I can't really get my head around it right now. I think when I wake up tomorrow, it will probably feel a bit more real. But after the game, walking around, hearing kids scream your name and wanting photos, wanting autographs and saying, oh, you're my favourite player, or oh, it was my first game. Like, it's so surreal to have that, and to have them saying to me, like, oh, I want to play here one day. And it's just giving children that kind of dream is something that I potentially didn't have as much when I was a kid. So to have the opportunity to give that to kids is just, to be honest, a really privileged position to be in. And I'm really grateful for that.
That is lovely stuff. Now then, Rossi, let's talk more about the game. If there was one person I wanted to see play a leading role on the day, it was obviously the legendary striker, Natasha Thomas, a proper club legend. And she duly scored the first goal. It couldn't be more fitting.
Yeah, I think that was probably the ideal candidate to score the first ever league goal at Portland Road. She has scored at Portland Road before in a County Cup back in 2019, I think that was, or 2018. She's had that feeling of scoring at the stadium before, but this is very much different occasion because of the crowd. Mm. It's a league game, you know, points are on the board. Obviously, it was a bit of a dead rubber game, but the occasion, and it wasn't a bad strike either. I love goals like that where it hits the post and in. And obviously, we said beforehand to all the girls, you got to celebrate. You can't just go into the middle of the pitch and hug. That's what normally happens, unfortunately, at the AGR Arena. There's a few celebrations here and there, but we went, you've got to proper celebrate because you've got to entertain the crowd. And that's what they did. They go and celebrate with the crowd. And what a moment for Natasha Thomas. You know, she's known for scoring. You know, that was, I think, because she scored another goal later in the game, obviously. I think now she's got 148 goals in 204 games, so not bad at all. So she's getting close to that 150 mark, which I'm sure she's going to hit at some point in the final few games of the season. But what a moment, and perfect player to score to make it 1-0.
Yeah, she is absolutely prolific, isn't it? I think probably if you ask most people who maybe don't follow the women's game that closely, I think most people would still know who Natasha Thomas was. So great to see her get on the score sheet. Go on then, AJ, give us your rundown of the rest of the day in terms of what impressed you, the goals, etc., etc.
Yeah, I think it's important to look at Natasha Thomas's strike for that, because it was actually interesting listen to Joshin talk about her afterwards in terms of, you know, it's a really good performance. She's got a brace there, and he was quite quick to speak about how hard it's been for her in a tactical sense. There was a lot of analysis that he gave in terms of the way that the centre-backs position themselves, which means that the opposition have to come on, there's less space for her to work, in terms of how the shape of the systems limit what she has to work with in the final third. So that may be afterwards, when you watch back the first goal in particular, with how little space she has to work with, I'd say that the instinct is probably to go far post, and she goes near post, whacks it in, kind of almost off the corner. It's a really unbelievable strike. She ended up with the player of the match award, which I think is hard to argue, but I also think it's important to have a word for Sophie Pescott, who was excellent. I think in the 6 a.m. piece I did on Sunday, I likened her to Iron Robin, just because she's very, very fast, likes to cut inside and will curl it with her left foot. The left-footed curlers, close, not quite for this one. The one that she did score, she just picks up the ball kind of in right side of the box, and it sticks to her like glue. She just went straight through. I think there were almost like three or four players around her. The finish is so cool. They could have gone in 3-0 up at half time. A missed penalty with a really good save there. And it's strange thinking that you're looking back at a game that at half time could have been 3-0, Joe Sheehan saying, I wasn't that impressed by the half-time side of things. So after the break, turned it on. So a couple of really nice goals. Really good to see Eloise King getting on the pitch.
Yeah.
We had a little look back at that one. So she's a big, big Town fan. There are some brilliant photos on Twitter of her wearing Town shirts. I mean, Joe Sheehan said before she could walk almost. And for her having had so many injuries in the last few months, or, I mean, even he said the last couple of years, to come on, get this Portman Road game, make that cameo in her first game back, I thought was excellent. So those, I'd say, were the main storylines, as well as the attendance, as well as kind of Mark Ashton setting out what they want to be in the future in terms of being a sustainable championship side down the line. I'd say that those are kind of the main big talking points to take away from what was a really magnificent day.
Yeah, we're going to hear a bit more from Sophie in a minute. But first of all, Stu, what were your takeaways from the game? I'm always interested for guys like you who watch football professionally and cover it. Can you now consume a game of football in a normal way? Or are you constantly looking at various things because it's just kind of bred into you?
Yeah, I think maybe if I'd been on my own or in different company, that might have been the case. Oh. Because I have my daughter there with her, it was quite nice. I was sort of just sitting explaining certain things. She wanted to know who their names were, just all those little sort of things. So yeah, I was able just to sit back and enjoy it. And yeah, we heard a lot in the build-up about how they share sort of qualities, yeah, DNA with the men's team, and you could certainly see that. Mentioned the fourth goal would be the prime example of that, but centre-halves have a lot of time on the ball and sort of baiting the press. Maria Boswell just sort of rolling the ball under her studs and waiting for people to come and then trying to build through the third. So, yeah, it was really enjoyable. I think, as you said at the start, really, it was, if you could have scripted it, a sort of a 5-0 win, okay, it wasn't quite the... Maybe it was a blessing in disguise. It wasn't quite the high-pressure going for a promotion game that it could have been. But, you know, Chatham are struggling down towards the bottom end of the table and it enabled them to sort of win the game without it being too overly one-sided. But they were able to win. They were able to entertain. And hopefully that will translate into bigger crowds sort of on Sundays at Felixstowe going forwards and maybe some more games at Portman Road when appropriate.
Mm, right, let's hear a bit more from Sophie Peskett about what she made of the day. Just going to have to remove an email there. There we go.
Great game by you today. What was it like waiting in the tunnel, hearing the music before coming out to the crowd?
Yeah, it was really surreal, if I'm honest with you. Like, I think you imagine it in your head and you build it up to be something, and then when you're actually in it, it just feels so... Yeah, I think the only word to describe it is just surreal. Walking out, seeing my family over the left-hand side was just an unreal moment that, yeah, I'll never forget, if I'm honest. And scoring in front of that many people was just a dream come true, really. So, yeah, I'm so happy. And, yeah, it's just unbelievable. I'm so grateful that all of the fans could come together and give us that opportunity, because I think we all deserve that.
Yeah, and what was it like when you saw the ball hit the back of the net and the crowd roar? What was that like?
Yeah, I don't think I knew what to do, really. I think I'd had a couple like celebrations and stuff planned in my head, and I did completely opposite to what I'd thought I would. I think I ended up kissing the badge, and I thought, you know what, I'll have that. It would be a great picture. So, yeah, I think it was, as I said, just surreal. I think, yeah, it was just an in-the-moment thing where I knew that I didn't want to get too much in my head about scoring, because you end up then overthinking it and it doesn't happen. And I think I had quite a good mindset about just being, as Joe said, process-driven, focus on the process before that. And yeah, when it hit the back of the net, I was just, I couldn't believe it, to be honest with you.
Rossi, obviously you know the women's team a lot better than any of us. Can you talk a little bit about what this day actually meant to them? I mean, I'm assuming they had a good night Saturday night.
Yeah, they went out Saturday night because obviously they normally play on a Sunday, so it's tricky to go out on a Saturday night and they've got a game on a Sunday. But yeah, I think most of the players went out into Ipswich. I think some of them stayed because not all of them live nearby. Some of them live in Essex and I think even London and stuff like that. But I think a lot of them went out just to celebrate the day, the occasion. But yeah, I think they just enjoyed it. Obviously, they've been waiting for so long and for them to have they had a lot of their family members as mascots as well. My niece Alana was shout out to her. She was a mascot as well, so I know she enjoyed the day. And you know, she was telling me that, you know, the players were just so, obviously they're so welcoming, and the players are so friendly. But yeah, I think they just every moment, because obviously as AJ said, they did the normal day like the men's team. They all drove to the grounds, then got onto the coach to then go to the Playford Road to have like some lunch together. Then they came in and obviously had a welcome of all the fans. Obviously, they went into the dressing rooms and seeing their shirts in the dressing room. I'm sure that was a moment to savour as well. I'm sure they took pictures and stuff like that. Walked on the pitch, had a little look round, knowing that they're going to be playing on this carpet. And obviously, I'm sure then they're warming up and seeing all the fans coming in. They're thinking, do you know what, girls? This could be a big crowd here. And then, yeah, I'm sure when they saw 10,000, I'm sure they were like just goosebumps and think, wow, we're just playing in front of 10,000 people. So, yeah, I'm sure they enjoy their day. And I'm seeing the great pictures being put out by them. I had a bit of a mare on the day, though. I'm a bit annoyed myself. It always happens. I swear, big occasion, it happens. In the first half, my card corrupted, so I lost over 400 photos. So I lost a good celebration with Peskett. And other great pictures. But luckily, there's other photographers there to capture the moments as well. But if I was the only one there, I would have been going, I've lost my job. So, but yeah, I'm sure they enjoyed the day.
Yeah. The other thing I'm interested in, Stu, what's the demographic of the crowd like? Because I'm led to believe that at women's games, it tends to be more families going. Is it? I mean, you say you referred there to your daughter didn't like the shouting and screaming, which clearly is what happens at football. Could you see a difference in sort of crowd demographic?
I think Ipswich Town in general has always been sort of quite family orientated, hasn't it? Mm. But it did feel like it was a sort of additional kind of younger families and a younger crowd there sort of experiencing it for the first time because they priced it appropriately as well to sort of attract people. But, you know, there was a lot of, I think, unusual sort of fans that go to a men's game, just crowds of blokes on their own. You know, the guys that make all the noise with the drums and everything, you know, that's that group of sort of blokes in their 20s and 30s sort of making all the noise as well. So I think it's important to say we're talking about the inspiration piece here about young girls and inspiring them to play football, but there's a lot of young boys there as well and men of older ages as well, and what occasions like this do is go a long way to kind of shaping how those boys will grow up sort of to view women's sport and women in general and the whole equality piece, which has improved massively over the last however many years. But there's still a way to go when you see certain high profile people on Twitter at the moment and sort of whipping up all various things like that. So, obviously the main thing is kind of the inspirational piece for girls. But yeah, it's just great to see a good mix of fans. We know that I think Ipswich have one of the highest percentages of female fans for the men's team. It was a real good mix, which was great to see.
Has Aya come away with a favourite player, Stu? Has she got a shirt with Thomas on the back, that kind of thing?
Not yet, no. She wasn't too bothered about going into the club shop. She's not great with crowds and noises and things like that. So, I was a bit sort of, I wouldn't throw her into a 29,000 men's crowd at the moment with the extra noise that brings. But, we'll see. I think it's one of those ones where it just plants a little seed in their mind, doesn't it? And you don't know how that will kind of manifest it further down the line. So I'm pleased we were there.
Mm. Right then, AJ, we've done almost half an hour on this. Why don't you put a cap on it for us? We're going to finish with a clip of Joe Sheehan talking about the championship, which obviously is the next big goal for the team. You referred to in your observations piece it being a springboard to even bigger and better things, and I guess ultimately that's what we want to see, isn't it? This day is great, but let's not stop here. Let's move on even further into the championship and make this a regular thing, maybe.
Yeah, I think so. It's quite remarkable when I was looking at it, thinking these are players that are working other jobs as part-time training, and yet they are in the third tier. And getting out of the third tier in previous years has been quite hard. It used to be up until last season that you had to win the league to even stand a chance of going up. So you then have to go into a game against the winners of the National League North. And then the winner of that game would go up into the Championship, which they've sensibly changed. That sounds a little bit crazy to me. Obviously, Town Women who missed out on the South title and goal difference last year as well. But going up into the Championship makes sense as the next kind of real step, because there is a real chance to then go and establish the club at a level that will be quite high. It will have Super League teams that are going to come down, for example, and teams that a lot of fans would have seen on the TV. And it is all about looking forward. At the end of the day, the aim in the long, long term will be to have an Ipswich Town women team in the Super League, which would be fantastic. A team that's playing huge crowds, you know, 20, 30, 40, whatever thousands, in front of Sky cameras against Manchester United, against leaders Man City at the moment, Chelsea you've seen play in Europe with one of the best managers going, Arsenal you've got unbelievable talents. And it's weird that you've got a group at the moment who are playing in front of 400 or 500, yet it's not a million miles away from what we're seeing right at the top. The pyramid isn't that deep. So the springboard there, if they can use it in the right way, can get them to a really high place, and that's a really exciting thing. If they're backed well, if they're able to use the facilities and develop in the right way, they've got a young squad there as well, average age 21, I believe. A lot of players who are kind of 17, 18 that will develop quite well. They seem to have a fairly good relationship, I can see, with some Super League clubs in terms of bringing talent in as well, and that will help going down the line. You look at someone like Lena Gunn-Williams, who's been excellent on loan from Spurs, and although she might be in the Championship next season, it shows that there are players who can come in to this team and work under Joe Sheehan and continue to develop to have the same kind of futures. So it's all about looking forward. And as Stu said, the aim will be to have more games at Portman Road with bigger capacities, hopefully, with a lot on the line in terms of Joe Sheehan reference. They don't just want to kind of end up getting promoted. They want to blitz the league. They want to be the strong team. They want to really earn their way through it and then go and establish themselves as a top team in the next level. It's not just about trying to fight to survive. It's always about looking for more than that. And to see that as the general mentality around the club, we've obviously seen it with the men's team. I think that shows that they can absolutely go and do that. And the rewards that could come with that are really, really big.
Right then, let's hear from Joe about the championship.
Mark Ash now on the pitch half time. He was the one who announced the attendance and as well. He kind of spoke a bit about what the long term aims are for the football club in terms of developing and progressing, in terms of getting up to the championship, establishing in the championship. Is that how you see it as well? Kind of those next steps given how you've been performing at the top end of this division?
Yeah, I think so. And you know, we hope that when we do get there, it'll be the right time to do it. Not setting the bar too high. We want to develop a really good product on the pitch. We want to help players develop week in, week out. And just like our men, we want to get to our championship and stay there and compete at the top end of it and not get there and struggle and have too many gaps and loose edges that need sort of tying up. So, yeah, it's all in good time. We're really process-driven and, you know, we hope that when we get it right, we can get there and stay there and compete there because we don't want to be a yo-yo. We want to blow the league away, in all honesty. We don't want to take it close. We want to perform consistently and get out of this division and absolutely compete in the division above.
I think it's important just to go back to something you said there, AJ, about the commitment and players kind of working around their day jobs and yet still playing at this level. That requires an extraordinary level of commitment and discipline to be able to train to the level to get as fit as you need to be playing football at this sort of level and still be working like a day job or a night job or whatever it is, you know?
Yeah, I think so. And factor in things like the travel as well. Yeah. I mean, we've seen Ross being sent to games in around Plymouth and Portsmouth and all those kind of things are miles away. And you're thinking that they're giving up their time that they would, most of us would have to relax over the weekends to refresh and reset to go into another working week of what can be really, really busy full-time jobs. And they're going and travelling to the other end of the country, having spent the week training and putting so much into it. And they're then going to go and have to play those games and play the games at a top, top level. It's really impressive. And I think it's important to then, yeah, factor in the fact that these are players that are juggling so much, two different things to make sure that they've got things like income and they're able to hopefully pursue a career in football that will take them more towards the top, and also making sure that they've got other aspects that can support them financially and other careers there as well. Because at the moment, that the third tier of English women's football is one where the finances aren't coming in enough to have full-time players. So hopefully down the line that will change. And similarly, hopefully down the line, this will be a club that can keep progressing up the leagues to get to a point where might not have to be the case, and there'll be enough coming in, enough in the attendances, enough in the TV revenue, enough in the competition reward money, all those kind of things that will mean that's not the case. But the players deserve a huge amount of credit for the way that they do that balance and the way that they have to put in so much just to play football competitively.
Rossi, on that note, is there anyone you want to shout out in typical Rossi style before we move on? We've talked a lot about Natasha Thomas, Sophie Peskett. Any other kind of players' names you want to shout out before we move on to the investment news from Friday?
To be fair, I think all the players deserve a shout out, to be honest. Yeah. You know, as I said before, what an occasion for them as well. It's such a young team. I think we had two of the defenders were 17 years old, Leah Mitchell and Evie Williams. Summer Hughes down that left flank, as I mentioned, she's like Leif Davis of Ipswich Town women's team because she's just non-stop, just up and down. So she had a fantastic game. I also want to give a shout out to Luce O'Brien because I think it was like maybe 12 minutes into the game. Sadly, she had a clash of heads with a player and she had to have a bandage round her. So for her to sort of recover from that, sadly, the Chatham Town player had to come off. I think that was their captain, if I remember rightly. I think it was. Yeah. So their captain, unfortunately, you know, it's because it's a day for Chatham Town as well. I know that sadly they got relegated, that they went down because of that result. But I'm sure that was still a good occasion for them to be playing at a stadium in front of 10,000 people. But yeah, for that Chatham Town player to go off 12 minutes into the game, probably not ideal. But yeah, for Lucy O'Brien to continue, because Lucy O'Brien's still young. I think she's only maybe 20, something like that. For her to be wearing that bandage like Terry Butcher did back in the day, Kiefer Moore, of course, against Cardiff recently. But yeah, all the players should get a shout. And I think just everyone, part of the staff as well, who have been part of this process, even Kieran, good old Kieran Stanley, who, funny enough, I sort of started this journey with doing the Ipswich Town podcast back in when I did radio. Shout out to IO Radio, which was an Ipswich online radio station. But yeah, Kieran, it was a special day for him because he's been covering the women's team since the very beginning in terms of, you know, growing the social media. And, you know, I know it was a busy few weeks preparing for this game. And obviously Joe Sheehan as well. I think Natasha Thomas mentioned on the Track the Gales Talk podcast, it's actually Joe Sheehan's day as well, because obviously he's grown this team, he's built this team. And for him to enjoy that, he's a little girl, I think only 8 months old, was the mascot, Miria Boswell, who of course was the captain. Was holding his little girl, and I'm sure she was like going, "What's going on?" Because she's only 8 months. I think she had the earmuffs on. I actually went and spoke to her mum, of course, Joe Sheehan's fiance, and she said, "Oh, I bet she was crying," but I'm sure it was a day to remember. But yeah, just shout out to all the team because they put on a show, and I'm sure that will encourage more fans to head down to AJ Arena.
Absolutely, what a day! What a day! And it was preceded by quite the night as well on Friday. I had friends, as I shared with Watson when he called me to tell this news on Friday. I had something of a prescient anxiety dream on Thursday night where my dream was thus. I had a call from Mark Ashton who said, "Mark, I've got something important to talk to you about. Can you get down to Portman Road?" "Yes, Mark, I can," I said. Went down, met him in reception. He said, "I'm just going to nip and get a coffee. I'll see you in my office." And from there, my dream became like The Labyrinth, you know, that film from the mid-80s with David Bowie, where things move and shift and everything's like a confusing warren. And I couldn't find his office. And I was getting really angry. I was looking at the time, and it's like an hour after the time we agreed that I'd see him in his office, and I ended up ringing him and going, "Mark, I'm really sorry. I can't find your office." And he said, "You're the sports editor of the local paper and you can't find my office." And then I woke up like this. So I think that must have been, in some way, I knew something was coming, and it duly did arrive on Friday afternoon. Massive amount of new investment into the club's due, £105 million pumped into Ipswich Town. We know already the club have obviously got some big backing, but this is just further reason to be excited about Ipswich Town.
Yeah, up to £105 million. Bright Path Sports is going to be the main investors, a private equity firm based in America. Michigan is one of their bases. It's, I think, the first example of Native American money being put into football, or soccer, as they call it. I don't think from the interviews with some of the guys that were on there, on the YouTube video that went out from the club, they said that's the first time that they've put any money into football. Still looking into kind of the other sports teams that they've invested to stateside. Sam Simon from Simon Group Holdings is also involved. He's got a really interesting background. Armenian family that left Iraq in the 70s and came over to America and sort of lived the American dream, really. I think they talk about him being $200 in debt, the family, when they first arrived in America, and self-made billionaire. His son, Peter Simon, is involved as well. Managed his high school soccer team and is a bit of a sports nut, and he's involved. And they were actually photographed at Portman Road back in January for the Sunderland game, and we knew something was brewing because there were these important looking people being given a tour of the pitch after the game against Sunderland, and we weren't quite able to stack it up, but heard sort of rumours of investment coming. And yeah, finally it was announced on Friday night. So another landmark day for Ipswich Town Football Club.
Absolutely. I mean, I guess in terms of dotting the I's and crossing the T's, now, I admit, before I start talking about this, financial, when it comes to numbers, I'm a bit of a Luddite. Normally, you find with people who are decent with words, which I claim I am, dreadful with numbers. That's definitely the case with me. But when you see this news, your first thought is, right, what does this mean? Like, ORG, what are they doing? Are they selling off? What's happening? And I was fortunate, I've had quite a long chat, I don't think you'd mind me saying, with Tom Ball on Friday night, the finance director at Town. That was what I said. So ORG have sold 40%, have they, Tom? No, mate, he said, that's not the case at all. Essentially, what's happened here is that Brightpath have pumped in all this new cash, 105 million, which then dilutes the shares down from ORG to 50%. So they're sitting at 50%. Then you've got Brightpath at 40, and then you've got a 10%, which is like the Three Lions, Marcus Evans, Ipswich Town PLC. So it's very important to stress that this is not anyone selling anything, as I understand it. It's more investment into the club. Everyone who has previously invested is no less invested. It's just that the pie, if you like, is much bigger. So,
in fact, they've actually put in a little bit more. I think there's talk about the Three Lions actually upping their investment as well. And ORG have been, that's the pension guys, have been very quick to say that they're not taking any money out of the club here at all. So it's just extra investment. I think this has always been the plan from what they've said, that the original investors had a pot of money to get Ipswich from, to turn Ipswich from a mid-table League One club into one that was competitive at the top end of the Championship. Mm. And they were always going to, at that point, look to bring in some extra money. Obviously, the progress on that front has been a lot quicker than anyone anticipated. So I guess they've probably had to speed up that process of bringing in a bit of extra money. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where that goes, how that's used, how it fits in with financial fair play. Few questions still to be answered over the coming days. We hope to be able to speak to people at the club to delve into this a little bit deeper. But look, I think the ownership have barely put a foot wrong, have they, since they've come in, and I think they've earned all of our trust. They've done the right things. They've been good people. They've engaged. They've been transparent. As Mark Ashton said in his interview, they didn't need to be this transparent about this new investment. Many clubs wouldn't have been, but that's been their ethos, to kind of bring the fans along on the journey and not patronise them with the information that's given out. So that's a big tick for me. And they said that, you know, they were in a good position where they were able to really kind of vet the people that they brought on board here, that people that needed to fit in with their values, that agreed with the method that they were running the club. A very quick kind of look at some of these people involved. I mentioned Sam Simon and others. They seem like they kind of fit in with all of the values that the club has been run by over the last couple of years. So, cautiously optimistic that this is going to kind of help Ipswich maintain this incredible momentum that they've had.
Yeah, as Stu says there, obviously we're going to be trying to dig a lot more into the detail of this and bring you as much as we can throughout the course of this week. The other question, clearly, AJ, as a football fan, well, probably the first question as a football fan is, right, when are we signing Amari Hutchinson for 50 million? but unfortunately, friends, they may have the money, but that doesn't mean they can spend it, unfortunately. It doesn't change the rules of FFP. And we'll talk about the accounts in a minute, because they came out on Friday night as well. That was fun. but where are we thinking this money's going to go then, AJ? Infrastructure, isn't it? That kind of thing.
Ah, mate, Amari Hutchinson for 50 million. I mean, they could. Look, let's be honest, they could. However, the one thing that you always hear, and that they've got the money to go and make all these big signings if they wanted to, and then they'd be in a situation, as we've seen other clubs that have been in terms of having points deductions and all sorts, and Town are in a very kind of nice balance where they've got ambitious owners who are willing to push the club as much as they can within the rules, which I think is really important. They don't sway too much one way or the other. And the one thing that stands out to me, as Stu says, kind of the people behind it, I think are really, really good. I really liked listening to Sam Simon, for example, and the whole message that came from the investors were, we're literally just here to put money in. If they want our advice, we're here to give advice. And we'll do what we can. We've got, you know, we're experts in this field and we're happy to do it. But we believe in Mark Ashton. We believe in people like Kieran McKenna to go and do that. That's what stood out to me, because there are other clubs, for example, in the Premier League, potentially with American owners, unnamed clubs in London, maybe, who have a lot of money there that they're not spending too wisely, or they're doing things that fans aren't too happy with. And it just feels like the right people are in the right positions. And obviously, yeah, the player side would be really big and important to strengthen, has to be done within reason. And outside of that, it is going to be things like improving the academy, Cat One Academy. It's going to be improving the training ground that's been spoken about a lot. Those are the kinds of things. And look, the facilities that Town have are good. I think we can all sit here and say that. But if they want to continue to grow, in a similar way that we've actually spoken about the women's team here, if they want to keep growing and reaching that next level, it's always going to be the mindset. It's the same thing that Kieran McKenna has. We're really happy with where we are, but we want to keep pushing to reach that next level. You've got to upgrade the facilities. You've got to make sure you've got state-of-the-art stuff all around you. You'll see things with the stadium, all sorts. That's where the money, I would imagine, will go into. But it's going to be shared around, and they'll try and maximise different things in different areas. It's not definitely all going to go towards a playing budget. Maybe there'll be more to play with, but as we said, it has to be within the confines of profit and sustainability and FFP, all those different things. But you're also going to see other areas that are going to continue to improve, and they have to continue to improve if the club are going to continue to push up the leagues. It's just a fundamental part of a team that wants to break into the Premier League.
Rossi, you were presenting a fan social live on Friday, new day location for fan social, which is going very well. What was the reaction like amongst the fans in terms of this investment? Because obviously investment, money into a football club, always exciting.
Yeah, of course, excitement. Obviously confusion as well, because obviously you have to, you know, dig in deep and try to find out a bit more about it. Obviously, I think they're just so happy about the communication side of it all. I think that's the thing we're happy about as well, because, you know, beforehand with Marcus Evans, we didn't have much communication, did we? We didn't really hear much from him. But now the American guys, you know, obviously when they first took over back in 2021, was it 2021? Mm-hmm. We got, you know, interviews with all of them. We did special podcasts with them as well. And then, you know, obviously we got a 44-minute video with Mark Ashton and co to discuss it all. But yeah, a lot of excitement really. And obviously they wanted to know a bit more about, so can we spend millions? Obviously then we said, no, sadly not. We can't go and spend 50 million on Amari Hutchinson, 50 million on Kylian, no, 100 million on Kylian Mbappe and all that. But yeah, just more money. And obviously we want Portland Roads to improve, want the training ground to improve, to bring in the best players. Obviously that's another big thing for players to come to the football club, knowing that they've got the best facilities to train at. So yeah, excitement as always, because you know, more money is always good money.
Town are signing Kylian Mbappe. Is that Devin?
Yeah, that's what I heard. I heard that. Yeah, I think he's turned down Real Madrid. We've got into it.
Stu, it's worth reflecting as well, isn't it? And we talk about this journey that the club have been on, and you've clearly been on that for a long time, along with myself. We say that 2021, the Americans came in. Although we never really had an exact figure, takeover was rumoured to be around 40 million. And now 105 million gets you 40%. So that kind of just is a sign of how things are. We keep referring to this rocket ship, but a sign of how things are growing and growing at a rapid pace at Town.
Yeah, what's that value? The club around 260 odd million pounds. So, yeah, I think Michael O'Leary, who by the way, just makes me feel calm about everything. Oh, if you hear that man speak, don't you? I think I just need to get tapes of his voice to listen to when I go to sleep at night. He's the steady hand, isn't he? I think he's the one that sort of Mark Ashton, when he's all pumped up, maybe speaks to Mike O'Leary and just keeps him on a level at times. But yeah, Michael O'Leary was kind of asked about, you know, what is the valuation of the club now in that interview, and he just kept it suitably vague and just said it's safe to say it's climbing. It's interesting to note that Mark Ashton talked about this being a sanity investment rather than a vanity investment.
Oh, nice.
Was his phrase, and how this isn't a toy, this isn't a plaything. We see, you know, sometimes people come in just to, you know, as I say, for ego reasons, to chuck a bit of money around and have a bit of a plaything. Obviously, the pension fund is going to want a return on its investment. It's got its return on its investment already in a short space of time. And same private equity. So there will obviously be a time limit on when they want that money back. That kind of exit strategy conversation will come further down the line. But both parties, all parties have stressed that this is a long-term project. And I think that's kind of shown in how this money's being spent at the moment, with, you know, a lot of money going into infrastructure. We've seen the first shots of what the designs of the training ground look like within that video as well, which looks very impressive. So stuff like that suggests that this is, you know, this is going to leave a bit of a legacy and grow the value of the club and leave it in a better place ultimately.
I've made quite a lot of vanity investments over the years, friends. These are a vanity investment right here. That's very much a vanity over sanity investment. That's the way I like to invest my money.
audio people, he's putting out his teeth, just yeah. Letting everyone know. Yeah, there you go.
My expensive gnashes. And as he says to you, I'd listen to O'Leary read the phone book. He's got such a soothing voice, hasn't he? Moving on then, friends, should we move on to the accounts, which also came out on Friday night? So obviously, we had all this excitement around investment. We also have to report the other side of things, which is the accounts. This is for the season they got promoted, the financial year 2022-23, which showed that their losses, which I guess is a headline figure, have increased again. 5 million up to around, I think it was 18.2 million that season, which clearly is a lot of money. And there's a line in there from Tom Ball, who has to write a statement for the accounts, where he says that losses may actually increase as they continue to pursue the championship goal of being promoted. Worth, though, obviously stressing within that, friends, that they were well within the FFP guidelines, which essentially are you're allowed to lose 39 million over a period of 3 years, roughly 13 million a year, and Town were well within those limits. Is there anything, AJ, you want to kind of reflect on the accounts, or shall we move on?
Yeah, I think it's just a natural thing, isn't it? And it can be seen as for better or for worse. I know that one figure who isn't too happy with it that I've always seen talking about is Andy Holt at Accrington Stanley, in the way that he says, yeah, I know. He always says, you know, if you want to be successful and climb the leagues, you have to put so much money in terms of that it's just their money pits, loss machines. And for all the things that he might say that people don't agree with necessarily, especially the controversies had recently with Accrington Stanley, I think it's a valid point in saying that. And at least the fortunate side of that is that Town have the base to cover those different things and make sure that they have people A that know what the limitations are, as I mentioned before, not to get points deductions for FFP and profit and sustainability, all those different kind of things, but also just in terms of having the backing there to make sure that they can go and do that. And it's a hard balance to find. There are other clubs, not just Accrington Stanley, who will find it hard to try and do that, to rise the leagues and sway, or not sway one way or another. So it might on the surface look alarming when you see that kind of rise in losses, but it's just a natural part of what a fast growing football club, I think, has to be honest.
Yeah, essentially they're investing a lot more money and spending a lot more money on things, so losses are going to rise. I thought other things just worth mentioning within that, I thought the wage bill increase was interesting, went up from 16.4 million to 19.8 million in League One, which I believe was the biggest wage bill in League One. And just mentioning that Tom Ball statement there, he says the average 3 year loss is 6.9 million and totals 20.6 million over the period. The EFL compliance threshold is 13 million per annum average loss and 39 million over the 3 year period. So still a lot of wiggle room there in terms of FFP compliance. I'm going to stick with you, AJ. Internationals, you're an international correspondent. Let's do a little news roundup as we end the show. We've had some international action over last week, and indeed last night. Just want to bring it up to speed because there's a huge game hopefully involving two Ipswich Town players tomorrow night in Wales.
Yeah, I don't think I've done any updates, have I? I've only done the kind of the big preview of what we've had going into this one. So we'll build up with the small a little bit. Cameron Burgess started his World Cup qualifying stuff. They played Lebanon last week. Both those games are in Australia. They won the first one. Oh, blimey, what was it? 2-0, I think it was. I'm having a moment now, but I think it was 2-0. And they're going to play again tomorrow. That's first thing in the morning if you want to go watch it. Get shown. It was 2-0, by the way. Get shown first thing, 8:45. I'm sure Ross would love that on the Australia national team's YouTube channel. That's going to be played in Canberra, and then it's going to be a short turnaround for Cameron Burgess to try and get back for Blackburn. Jeremy Sarmiento's finished his international duty, which is good. He's not got any injuries by the looks of it, and he's come back and is very proud to have started both games. Last night's one was a 2-0 defeat, unfortunately, to Italy, which, I mean, given what Italy are, it's not a massive surprise. And before that, it was a 2-0 win against Guatemala, provided the assist for the first goal, and that won the lovely kind of raking crossfield ball. So he's happy to be back in the mix, and covering him has given me a chance to use my Spanish A-level knowledge and translate the quotes, which has been good fun. That's the first time I've properly used any of that stuff in a long time. And then the big one is Wales. Obviously, they went and they beat Finland. That was a 4-1 game. Weirdly, I mean, yeah, Nathan Broadhead being on the bench isn't a huge surprise, but a real shock not to see Kiefer Moore in the starting lineup for that one. He came on around midway through the second half, and Nathan Broadhead got stoppage time. So they got a big win there that will set them up for a huge, huge game tomorrow night against Poland in Cardiff, which, well, the winner will go to the Euros. We'll go in the group with Holland, France and Austria, which is a group of death. So essentially the winner will go through and get knocked out probably in the group stages of the Euros. Can't lie. But would still be great to see some Town boys there. So fingers crossed they can go do that. You can go watch that one on S4C if you really want to.
Selfishly as well, it would be good for us if Wales
absolutely
give us some content stream over the summer when things get a little bit quiet and difficult. Stewie, news roundup time. Leicester are in hot water with the Premier League. You got any thoughts on this? Because clearly it's not the EFL, it's the Premier League. So if they get promoted, which clearly at the moment it looks like they're going to, although AJ has rightly predicted they're going to fall apart, they could start next season on minus points, which seems a little bit unfair, if you don't mind me saying, on the rest of the teams competing with them in the Championship.
A bit complicated, this one, as you say, for reasons that they've fallen foul of rules whilst in the Premier League. They're in the Championship now. We're very late in the day in the season. We're seeing already with Nottingham Forest that it's going to be a late scramble for the appeals process to happen, you know, in time before the season ends. So it's all getting a bit messy, isn't it, on an FFP front. For years, we've talked about the rules having no real bite, no real teeth to them. Teams were kind of, I think, flagrantly. That's difficult to say, isn't it? You know what I mean. Yeah. Kind of, overspending and then just taking a little rap on the knuckles afterwards. And finally now, things are changing with Everton, Forest, everything hanging over Man City. And we saw, obviously, the driest January transfer window ever, as teams kind of reined in their spending in fear of all of that. So it's a very interesting financial landscape at the moment. But ultimately, it doesn't look like it's going to affect the Championship promotion race this season.
Or will it? It's the sort of thing that Leicester get promoted and then we see like court cases going on.
Yeah, or just from a psychological point of view as well. You know, it's another thing that's kind of hanging over Leicester. We talked about, you know, even when things were going really well for them, the fans were getting a little bit antsy about the style of play, which was a bit confusing at the time, to be honest, looking from the outside in. Dropped a few points recently, didn't they? So maybe this all kind of adds to the pressure situation on them. If you look at the top two, they look like the team more likely to falter than Leeds at the moment, who've been going like a steam train. But yeah, who knows after this little international break, a bit of a reset for everybody. And we keep saying it. There's going to be some twists and turns to come, I'm sure.
Absolutely. And Rossi, you are ex-Blues correspondent. A big day for a lot of ex-Blues Saturday. It's Monday now, isn't it? Chesterfield back in the Football League after 6 years, I think it is, away. And recognise that manager on the sideline there, Rossi. He's been somewhere before, hasn't he? And indeed, one of his star players has also, I think, played at Town.
Yeah, and a lot of his coaching staff as well. Paul Cook is the first man to mention. He did his iconic sort of like, you know, post-match interview after with his voice just changing. And he's on the Peronis apparently after the game, obviously. But yeah, fair play to Paul Cook. You know, he, you know, went back to Chesterfield in the National League and they smashed it this year. I think they could have won the league, you know, a couple of weeks ago, but I think they lost and dropped points and stuff. But yeah, they've smashed it and won the league title in March, which doesn't happen that often. But yeah, he's got some former Town players in his ranks. Armando Dobra, the Albanian winger, obviously was a you know prospect coming through our academy, but you know just one of those things moved on, and he's done really well for Chesterfield. They've got Bailey Clements as well, a left back. He went out on loan to Eastleigh actually, fair enough, this year, and then he came back to Chesterfield, and he's now starting for them. So yeah, two academy graduates. You know, winning a league title. Obviously, they've got Gary Roberts as well, another former Town player. He's a coach under Paul Cook. And then obviously, good old Kieran Dyer is also a coach there. And I think Kieran obviously enjoyed that because he was taking pictures with Armando Dobra. Obviously, he's been a big fan of him because he, of course, coached him for the Town under-18s. And yeah, I'm sure it was a special day for them. And the Chesterfield fans went on the pitch and they celebrated it. But, yeah, to celebrate a promotion and a league title in March, it feels weird. But yeah, fair play to Paul Cook and co.
21 points clear, they are. Absolutely smashed the league to bits this season. Some great pictures, actually. You want to see them. They're on our website of Dobra being carried aloft with the trophy on the pitch. Fantastic stuff. It'll be interesting to see how they take to League Two next season, won't it? Because they're clearly way too good for the National League. They've got Will Grigg playing for them as well at Chesterfield, which is obviously a bit of a blast from the past. Friends, anything else to mention? Have you got any thoughts on this England shirt debate? Boys, as a personally myself, as a member of the tofu eating, soy latte drinking, liberal elite wokerati, I didn't have a problem with it.
No, that was a controversial way to end the podcast. Well,
where's the debate?
I don't think that that one goes too high. It's all the comments about what it could mean, and I think it's just the last bit of color on it. And,
just chill out, people. Yeah, it doesn't mean fair anything. Enough. Just a football shirt, Jesus.
Have you noticed as well that Town are going to have their own mini international break to themselves next month as well, which will be great fun. They're going to have a nice
commentary
commentary now gets rearranged for the Tuesday night, the final week of the season as well. That's a big week.
Yeah.
I obviously wasn't covering the club at this point. It feels like the shades at Barnsley I've seen mentioned with that one there from last year. But that's going to be an interesting one. Does that benefit a club? Does that really be a bit of a nightmare if you've got a 2-week break at that point? Does it destroy your momentum? Does it give you a rest? I don't really know.
Hey, we're going to talk about all that nearer the time, okay? As we create content and opinion and analysis.
Back to the England shirt.
Oh, dear, oh, dear. Yeah. Anything else to mention, boys? I've got some TV recommendations to throw out. I know people like those. Fresh from Masters of the Air, I've been watching some seriously good TV. Stewie, have you watched on Netflix? Have you seen this show called Three Body Problem?
No.
You're into your sci-fi sort of stuff, aren't you? Are you? You certainly have
interest in astronomy. Yeah, I don't mind sci-fi.
This is mental, mate. It's from the Game of Thrones creators. It's, broadly speaking, the show is about alien invasion. But there's so many different aspects to it. A lot of it's kind of tied up in like a video game that people, the chosen ones, play. It looks incredible. It's incredibly like epic, and it's got a lot of the Game of Thrones actors in it. It's ridiculous, but it's like compelling, addictively ridiculous. I'm not entirely sure what's going on, but I know that I want to see more of it. So I'd highly recommend Three Body Problem, and also a show that I happened across on Netflix, which I think quite old now, called Godless, which is a Western series. Usual Western tropes, mysterious stranger comes into town, things kick off from there. Very, 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 very good if you're looking for something to fill a few hours. Anything good you've been watching, boys, you want to throw out there?
I was a little bit shocked to see that Stu hadn't seen Arrested Development. Stu, you need to watch Arrested Development. Sorry for kind of throwing you under the bus here, but that did come as a bit of a surprise to me.
I haven't watched it either. So.
You haven't watched it? Oh, no. I've noticed that a lot of the times I'll make reference, weirdly me, we'll make like reference, like I made a Father Ted reference over the weekend to Mark, and it'll go a million points to you. And I'm slightly concerned that we might be the only ones who get some of these.
It is strange, because obviously Father Ted was on way before you were born, AJ.
Yeah. And but it is also like classic television.
The greatest sitcom of all time, easily. So you get a billion points. I'm doing that especially to wind Watson up. I thought he might come back at me there, but he's not going to. Anything else to mention, Rossi? Have you watched anything good?
I watched Dune Part 2 yesterday in the cinema. What, I went to the cinema.
Say that again.
Dune.
Yes, Dune.
That's what my Mrs. Sasha, she said, she just joked, she laughed at me when I said, what are we watching? Went Dune Part 2.
Dune. Was it good, Bob?
That was really good. It's long, but yeah. I went to the cinema. I don't go to cinema that often, you know, obviously, because you've got so much access to watch at home these days, because, you know, streaming and all that. But to actually go to the cinema, you know, have a bit of sweets, have some popcorn, big ass screen in front of you. And obviously you need that for this sort of film because visually it's unbelievable. Like the cinematography of it is just unbelievable. So yeah, I watched part one because it's on Netflix now. Other streaming services are available. Watched that on Friday night after doing the fan social. And then yesterday watched it, had a nice some Asian food as well. So yeah, it was a nice day yesterday. But
You eat out more than I do, Ross, which bothers me.
Yeah, maybe I should do some reviews, maybe. Although
I would love to see that. Yeah. I would absolutely love to read those.
Well, so technically, there has been reviews on MediaScan. There was MediaScan on Saturday, so that's what made it more, you know, because I did a game day as well. So just like the men's team, got your MediaScan rating, and it was not too shabby.
Anything else from you, Stewie? Have you been watching any good TV? I know, obviously, you're a father, so you don't have any time to yourself. You don't watch TV. But, anything to recommend?
I watched plenty of TV. We watched Top Gun Maverick last night.
Oh, what a film.
Yeah, I'd seen it in the cinema, but my wife hadn't watched it. And I said, look, you got to watch it. It's a perfect nod to the original. And she enjoyed it. But afterwards, she said, it's quite intense, isn't it? Obviously, lots of dogfights and flying scenes and, you know, POV. And she went, oh, I feel a bit queasy after watching that. It's a bit tense. She woke up in the night and was quite violently ill. I was kind of holding her hair back. She thinks it might be to do. I mean, we'd all eaten the same things. The rest of us were fine in the house. So she thinks she might have just got a bit of motion sickness from watching Top Gun last night.
Mm. Wow. I would argue that is one of the rare examples of a sequel being better than the first film in the series. Because you watch Top Gun now, it hasn't aged that well. But Top Gun Maverick is unbelievable cinematic viewing, so highly recommended if you've not seen that. I think it's dropped on Netflix now as well, hasn't it?
Channel 4, I believe, over the last few days. So that's how we
here endeth points of view TV picks with the KOA crew. Just a reminder, friends, support our sponsors, use the code KOA at manscaped.com for 20% off and free delivery and all that excellent stuff. Numerous new products hitting the market there, so get 20% off and enjoy them with us. And also, friends, leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, just helps us lift visibility wise in the charts. And also, of course, AJ, followers across all our social medias, the boring old ones that only granddads use, like Facebook, but also the new exciting ones that are down with the kids, like TikTok.
Yeah, please do come and follow us. There's lots going on there. I didn't realize you were going to come to me there. Yeah, it's cool, it's hip, and it's slick. And if you're not on there, you should go download the app. And even if we're the only account you follow, you'll get everything straight there, all the clips be there right there for you with lots more to come, because I know that Mark is really closely following. He's one of our many followers, I'm sure, has it right at the top of his phone, comes on his check every single time.
Absolutely. I think if people were asked about me, the first thing they'd probably say is cool.
Look at the way he's sitting on his chair. TikTok. This is what you get for subscribing.
It's cool. I might just flip my chair around and sit the reverse way when I'm talking about TikTok, because it's very cool, isn't it? Friends, we've done just over an hour now. We've covered a lot of ground this week, a lot to talk about, lots of exciting news, which is great at Ipswich Town. Lovely to be able to talk about it. And we're heading into a very, very exciting weekend. Two games, Easter weekend, Good Friday, Easter Monday, and also Rossi, Easter Sunday, Fabio Wardley's. He's only headlining the O2. Absolutely nonsense for a lad from Ipswich to be headlining the O2. No amateur background whatsoever. Now fighting at probably the biggest and most iconic arena in the country for boxing. We'll be covering that too. I also want to shout out one of our listeners, Richard Tatterton, who I understand is having some tough times. Richard, sorry to hear that, mate. Glad that you say listening to the show it kind of lifts your mood. We're happy to be able to do that for you. And also, mate, all of our thoughts with you. Thanks for your message on that front. And with that, friends, I think we should probably end the show for the first part of this week. We'll be back later on this week, of course, to build up to that big weekend of Ipswich Town sport and a bit of boxing as well. Have a great start to your week, friends, and we'll speak to you again later on this week.